morning, honorable members, esteemed ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Maseko and Mr. Klute, you are welcome. And Mr. Klute, thank you very much for what you are doing together with the Cape Town Tourism Disadvantaged Community. I'm very grateful for what you have done since the summit. Your efforts are recognized. And then, without much ado, the purpose of our meeting today is to deal with issues around ACSA, with the intention of getting a briefing by the Airports Company of South Africa, that is ACSA, on plans to improve coordination between the aviation and tourism sectors in respect of tourism development, growth, and job creation and the challenges thereof. Among the issues are the charges at airports. There is a complaint from airlines that our charges are quite high, and there may be an increase of about 70% this year. Secondly, there is an issue of high baggage theft, particularly at O.R. Tambo Airport. Perhaps it would assist for me to read an article that was in the Daily News yesterday, in the 12th of September. The headline reads, "Airport Theft a Larger Issue Than Claimed." ACSA's figures are not correct, insists travelers. And then it goes on to say, predictably, I received many responses to my column about the incidence of baggage pilferage at Johannesburg's O.R. Tambo International Airport. In a nutshell, the Airports Company of South Africa had disagreed with SAA's claims that the baggage pilferage at our biggest airport was out of control, saying the average number of bags pilfered at the airport had reduced steadily from 36 incidents a day to 14. But this figure is undoubtedly conservative, as the airlines are not legally required to disclose the number of pilferage incidents reported to them by their passengers. And in many cases, people who had their bags pilfered don't bother to report this to the airline concerned, regarding this to be a waste of time. I know of three incidents where it was never reported for the simple reason that it takes time and you get nowhere with the authorities, said Mr. Ben Stein of RIMSA. In my case, it happened in February when we flew to Namibia with SAA. I booked in early, but did not wrap my suitcase as it was expensive. I think it is about 50 rand each time. On arrival in Windhoek, I saw my lock was gone, and when I opened the case, I found it inside, and I could see that someone had rifled through my bag down to my every compartment in my toiletry bag, but nothing was missing. Michael Grummet, or is it Grummet, who works in Tanzania and returns to South Africa every 6 to 8 weeks, said anecdotal evidence suggested that baggage on many SAA flights from O.R. Tambo to Dar es Salaam was pilfered or lost. Then they said, lucky. I count myself lucky that this has not happened to me so far, but it has happened to my colleagues, he said. Locks are smashed, zips unpicked, baggage slashed, and even wrapped luggage has been opened. And then they show somebody with this thing, wrapped luggage, which has been opened. This pilferage can only occur at O.R. Tambo, as there is no time to do it at Dar es Salaam. Many of the colleagues either took only carry-on luggage as a result, or opted for cable ties and double locks on their check-in luggage. My suggestion other than never packing valuables in your check-in luggage is to report any pilferage of your luggage, not only to your airline, but to AXA as well. Comair, meanwhile, said it had the lowest pilferage rates on its Kulula and British Airways flights, less than one bag in 5,000. We take full responsibility for our customers' bags and don't just blame AXA, said Joint CEO Mr. Gideon Novick. He listed the many measures the airline and the ramp handling service provider, that is Big Air, took in its aero tolerance. It took in its zero tolerance approach to pilferage, including this novel one. Then, quote, baggage handlers are required to use thick gloves in the hold, so it is not easy to fill inside bags for small items. They face serious disciplinary action if found without them. Then the article stops. I read the whole article so that you get the balance, the whole article. Otherwise, perhaps I may have my own biases. But the point is, there is a lot of pilferage, particularly at O.R. Tambo Airport, and the situation of this company blaming the other is not going to assist. We have to have total teamwork. If we are managers, we become managers because we are leaders. Leadership is one of the most important things in management. So good leaders take responsibility, whether they know about the what has happened under them or not, but they take responsibility and take corrective action. But the next area would be the area of baggage handling, which is not overseen at airports, but particularly also at O.R. Tambo Airport. Quite often you find that you are given information that your baggage is in Carousel 1, only to find that it is in Carousel 5, but no one is giving you information as to the change and what caused the change. And we have had those experiences. And there is no one to ask at the Carousel where to find the bags. This contributes to experiences at the airports. And then there is also the issue of the overall experience, the overall memories, the overall dreams that tourists have about our destination, that is South Africa. It is our duty, as a collective duty as a nation, to enhance those dreams, to make them positive, so that we get tourism coming to South Africa over and over and over again. It seems that the main weakness is at O.R. Tambo Airport. There are weaknesses at other airports as well, but the most reported ones are at O.R. Tambo. It may be because of the frequencies of the flight or the number of passengers per day, but it is major concerns. And what we want from you, I've read your input, is that also the airline has got to take responsibility. We do understand that. Definitely airlines have got to take responsibility. But let us overgrow that stage where we do not meet and then we point fingers for the sake of our beautiful motherland. But over to you, Mr. Marcel. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity to come and present. Just in terms of the structure, I don't know if you'd like for me to jump straight into the baggage issues and then come back into the tariff. Okay. Well, then I suggest that I will go through the presentation as is. Firstly, I'd like to apologize. We were unable to attend the previous sitting owing to the leadership changes that we're experiencing in our organization. So we're trying to balance many balls, and unfortunately, we just did not have the right level of representation to send to the committee to give an explanation on the matters that have been raised. Having said that, I would like them to go straight into the presentation. Just from a global perspective, I'm not going to go through each and every bullet there, but it's just to give an overview of air transport globally and what it represents as part of its importance in terms of economic growth, especially bullet three. Air transport is indispensable for tourism, which is a major engine for economic growth, particularly in developing countries. The point that I'd like to make there is that, and I'll come to the tariff issue a little bit later, we recognize the role that we play in the tourism value chain, and we recognize the service issues that we need to address. About 5 or 6 years ago, our passenger volumes were growing domestically, certainly by double digits. In the international area, we had very, very strong growth numbers, which was really the reason why we have responded to expanding our airports in the way that we have. I know that largely people attribute the World Cup to the upgrading of our airports. Well, we were fortunate in that, yes, we did host the World Cup, and we took a deliberate decision to have completed the upgrade by the World Cup, but the World Cup was not the reason why we upgraded our airports. Just by way of example, in Bloemfontein and Port Elizabeth, we deliberately did not upgrade those airports during the World Cup. We used temporary infrastructure because we recognized that the traffic levels at those airports do not justify the growth. Just a little bit on tourism. Like I said, we have a full appreciation for the dependence of our country on tourism and the contribution that tourism makes towards GDP. And like I said earlier, where we see ourselves as playing a major role is being an enabler, being able to provide the infrastructure that is going to bring the tourists back. I know that we're going to be talking about baggage issues later, but 5, 6, 7 years ago, we had just general challenges of service at our airport. There were long queues at immigration. There were long queues at customs outside of the baggage handling issues. And we think that we've come quite a long way in trying to address those service issues such that we create the lasting impression that we expect for our tourists to have when they come into our country. Having recognized the journey that we have taken, that's not to say that we have arrived. We recognize that the journey is still long, and service issues, certainly as part of our development towards the tourism sector, is important for us. Just in terms of the airport sector, just by way of example, just the disparity of our major cities, Cape Town to Johannesburg, or Johannesburg to Durban, or Johannesburg to PE, warrants quite strong role for airlines. Just by way of example, the Johannesburg-Cape Town route is now equivalent to the London-Madrid route or the Amsterdam-Rome route, just in terms of the intensity of people that use the route. So in the domestic market, certainly the Golden Triangle is strong, certainly being anchored by OR Tambo. I know that you had mentioned the fact that most of our problems are at OR Tambo. I think why that statement is true is because OR Tambo does more than double the traffic that Cape Town does. So it accounts for 70% of our business. That's where the volumes are, just in terms of the people. So by extension, you would expect that the majority or the concentration of problems would be where the majority of our passengers travel. Just in terms of the linkages, and I'm just taking the three major airports. I'm not going to go through each and every slide. I'll be glad to take questions. But that's really just to demonstrate the link between the role that our airports play and the employment that is created by activity in and around our airports. So that really, again, just to emphasize the link between tourism and the role that we play in the tourism value chain and the jobs that are directly linked to the tourism sector. A study that was done by the University of Johannesburg back in 2006, which is currently being updated, indicated that the three international airports, that is Johannesburg, Cape Town, or Tambo, Cape Town, and Kinshasa, contribute over $85 billion towards the GDP of our country. So again, that really just underpins the importance of our airports and the role that they play. The total employment impact is over 330,000 jobs, and approximately 150,000 new jobs will be created as a result of the expansion at our airport. So this is really just to emphasize that, yes, there is a very, very important and pressing need to continue expanding our airports just because of the role that they play, not only in the international tourism sector, but also the domestic tourism sector, and the activities that they support in and around their cities. And that's, again, just a projection into the future that was done by the company there that you see, Mott MacDonald, and that's just a projection of the increased traffic activity is going to have a significant impact in supporting job creation moving into the future. And in those specific categories, on airport, those are the direct jobs, and off airport are the jobs that support activities at our airport over the next 9 years. This slide is really just to demonstrate, yes, we have gone through a significant period of investment in our airport. The red line at the top, if I can just take you to it, this line here, shows that we're currently provided for a capacity of over 55 million passengers. And this really just is to underpin the fact that we have continued to see our growth in those years, yes, that was right in the middle of the global economic recession. But generally, our traffic numbers have continued to grow. So, and the reason, part of the reason why we're showing this slide is that we anticipate that possibly by about 2016, 2017 or thereabouts, just depending on which forecast you go by, we expect that we shall be reaching just over 50 million passengers, whereas today we're sitting at just over 32 million passengers. So, and understanding that to deliver future capacity, it probably takes about 3 or 4 years. So we anticipate beginning to construct again for the next level of growth at our airports, probably in about the next 4 to 5 years. But we believe that we have provided sufficient capacity now. And these are just a theoretical capacity. Certainly the red line there speaks to the theoretical capacity of the airport system within the country. I know that at this committee, mention has been made of the linkage between airport charges having a negative impact on tourist growth. Really, we see the linkage, there's a closer linkage between traffic growth and GDP, rather than we fail to see a link between tariff increases and traffic volumes. Over the years, from certainly when I joined Airports Company back in late 99 to today, our traffic numbers have continued to grow, despite the fact that we have had tariff increases. We've had, in fact, and I'll speak to that slide a little bit later. Just late last week, SAA reported a 77% increase in net profit. This is despite, they also reported an increase in traffic numbers. This is despite the 33% tariff increase. Comair is going to be reporting again, I think towards the end of this week, what their results are. And whilst SAA reported a 77% growth in earnings, Onetime reported a loss. So we failed to see the direct link between airport tariffs and traffic volume. This is just a history of the evolution of airport charges. This is really how they have grown. And you will see from here that our problem really started in 2007, when our economic regulator introduced what is called pre-funding. In other words, we would have preferred for the charges to be smoothed out, and that's this gray line for domestic and this one for international. But you will see when they introduced pre-funding, we had the sudden spike in tariffs, and that's why there's been a lot of publicity about a 133% tariff increase or a 70% tariff increase. We would have preferred for there to have been a smoothing of the tariff over time rather than just the spikes that, the unfortunate spikes that you will inevitably see every time we finish a major project upgrade.
Excuse me, sorry for the interruption again. I just want to be clear exactly what exactly this pre-funding means.
Thank you, Chair. Pre-funding means that we are not allowed to charge for infrastructure that is still under construction. So what that means is we have recently completed, up until the end of last year, an investment program of over 17 billion rand. Now, you take 17 billion rands and you bring them onto our balance sheet all at once, and you start beginning to charge for that infrastructure, is inevitably going to have a huge spike in tariff increases. And we would have preferred, as you saw leading up to 2006, wherein there's a smoothing effect of the tariff, and you don't have these unfortunate spikes of 133%. The next wave of development, just by way of example, at OR Tambo, it's probably going to be in the region of about 40 billion rand. Now, you can imagine what's going to happen to the tariff when we bring 40 billion rand of infrastructure onto our balance sheet. So, for the last 5 or 6 years, there has been no tariff increase. Whilst we've been constructing through this difficult period, there has not been, you as a passenger have not paid us a tariff increase. the airline has not paid us a tariff increase. But now, because we're bringing onto our books what you see at Cape Town, what you see at Oa Tambo and elsewhere, there's naturally going to be the unfortunate spike in tariffs because it's all coming in at once. So it's almost like it has a shock effect, so to speak, rather than we would have preferred a more smoothing effect of the tariff. But that is something that the National Department of Transport has since recognized. You cannot expect for an entity like ACSA for 5 years not to increase tariffs at all, to go and borrow money from private lenders, and then there is still uncertainty. We would have preferred, just by way of example, in terms of our own calculation, we would have preferred a 133% increase just by our calculations in the tariff, which has an unfortunate spike both for airlines, which equally has an unfortunate spike for passengers. But we would have preferred that 133% perhaps be 20% in 1 year, 25% in another year, such that it's something that can be accommodated rather than it be all brought in at once. So that is, and I hope I've clarified the meaning of pre-funding, but this is something that we discussed with our economic regulator to say, you know, by not allowing us to go and smooth this tariff, are you going to have the stomach to give us the huge increase when we bring all of this infrastructure onto our books? And so those were the rules of the game. We played by those rules. Unfortunately, and just so that I can put the 70% into perspective, our tariff increase this year is actually 35%. But because we are collecting it over a shorter period of time, we're collecting it from October to March, it actually has to double from the 35 to the 70%. So the real increase in our tariff this year is 35% against the 133% that we would have preferred. Mention again, Chairperson, has been made about the fact that OR Tambo is one of the most expensive airports to fly into in the world. In 2009, we did a study with an entity called Jacobs Consulting. It's now called Lee Fisher & Associates. And in 2009, we were the 40th cheapest airport out of the 50 most expensive airports. Now, with the 133% increase, the bullet there, we estimated that had we gotten the tariff of 133%, we would have been sitting somewhere in the middle. So this myth that we are the most expensive airport to fly into, we fail to understand where that comes from. And this is an organization that solely reviews airport charges globally. They benchmark. And when they, just so that the committee can have sight of this, they actually estimated that 133% increase in tariffs would have a once-off negative impact of 5% on domestic traffic. That was back in 2009. Today, I can report that our domestic traffic is up by 6%. So there's no correlation between a tariff increase and the impact that it has. They said it's going to have no impact on international traffic volumes, only a 5% increase in domestic. And year on year today, our passenger traffic is actually up. So it further demystifies their estimations at the time that there was going to be a 5% reduction. The real numbers today talk of a 5.8% increase. This is just what I was mentioning earlier. Airport charges are a major threat to airline profits, and this is what has been reported in the media lately. We fail to understand that. On the 9th of September, SAA announced a 77% rise in profits. Business Day on the same day, this is a direct quote from them, passenger traffic grows 8%. We know airline performance tracks economic growth. We are concerned about the low economic growth for traditional markets. So, by their own admission, the airlines are saying it is economic growth, actually. There are factors such as the price of oil, the global recession, that are going to have a far greater impact on tourist volumes, and we've seen that. with the recession, rather than the airport tariffs. The airport tariffs, we believe, are but an insignificant amount of the have an insignificant effect on the passenger volumes. Again, on the 9th of December, 9th of September, IATA, economists, IATA is the global airline body. Economists say deliveries of new aircraft are expanding the total number of seats available worldwide at an annual rate of 6%. So in other words, airline capacity is growing at an annualized rate of 6%. Putting pressure on the balance of supply and demand, resulting in slower and earlier rise in yield. So overall, globally, even IATA is admitting that passenger numbers are growing. But it's when you read statements that say a tough year for SAA due to competition and weak demand. Operating costs climbed 5%, largely driven by an 18% increase in fuel prices. So again, there are other factors other than just airport charges that affect the global competitiveness. Our tariff increased by 33%, but SAA is saying that the fuel tariff is more of a concern for them. With things that are happening globally in places like Libya, we do anticipate that the price of fuel will continue to rise. And those are issues that fall way out of the control of airports. Globally. Just so then that I can conclude on the tariff issue and its effect on tourism, we believe that our airports are strategic assets. Strangely enough, we are a volume-driven business, similar to the airlines. We have a common destiny in that we want to grow our airports to see more and more people. It would be silly of us to want to grow our airports only to see less people traveling through them. At Cape Town, we would like to see this airport grow at a rate faster than we have anticipated, because we believe it's a strategic asset for this, not only this region, but also the country. OR Tambo is a significant gateway to Africa, certainly to sub-Saharan Africa, and we believe that we have positioned it well in that regard. And we believe that really our area of realizing value is on the non-aeronautical side of the business, on places such as real estate development, places in areas such as our commercial revenue. And that's really what we would like to concentrate our energies on. Yes, there is going to be a once-off spike in the tariff, but like I said, for the next 2 or 3 or 4 years, we are not going to be building. So once that once-off spike is going to result in a normalized increase in tariff until we start building again. Chairperson, I don't know if you'd like me to pause here and just take questions before I go on to the baggage privilege issues, or you'd like for me to conclude.
The problem I have is that people tend to give statements rather than ask questions of clarification. If there is someone who is asking a question of clarification, let them do so. But if there is a statement, allow me to stop you immediately that I sense you are making a statement. Would that be okay? Because in the interest of time, Mr. Kumbelo.
Thanks, I'll be very quick. Just a question clarification. The fourth bullet on the last slide, real estate development. It says there to unlock value from non-aeronautical revenue streams. Can that just be explained? Is AXA developing OSHA for hotels or something? I'm not quite sure what that means.
Okay.
Is there any other question? Thanks, because it's easy.
Okay. If I can just respond to that. There are two sides of our business. There is the regulated side, that is the monies that we generate from passengers and airlines, and that is the regulated side of our business. And then there is the non-regulated side of our business, which is the non-aeronautical side of our business. And so by real estate development, we recognize, by just by way of example, that we've got vast tracts of land at our airport that we're not capitalizing on. And I can give an example of Cape Town Airport. We have built a pick-and-pay storage facility. We've got vast tracts of land at Bloemfontein, at Kimberley, in places like Upington. So we're really saying, with this vast land that is sitting and that is idle, what opportunities can you capitalize on? And such that you are less dependent on the regulated side of the business, and where you are not regulated, you can then go and strengthen and unlock value on that side of the business. I hope that has answered the question. I'll be happy to do so.
Something adds to your revenue stream in line with the estate development.
Okay.
I think it deals with more Woolworths and all those shops that are paying rent after development in pick and pay and so on, as has been mentioned. Okay, let us continue then in the absence of questions.
Just on baggage pilferage then, these are really the areas that I would like to touch on. And I would like to combine my presentation with some of the issues that you raised from the article, Chair. So I'd really like to deal on the negative perceptions among the general public and the media, and some of our efforts to increase baggage pilferage, some of the security measures by airports and airlines, and areas wherein we believe legislation can play a role. Oftentimes people bandy about statistics of baggage pilferage. The purpose of this slide is really to emphasize that within the airline lingo, there is no global statistic or global benchmark for baggage pilferage per se. Baggage pilferage is but one element of what is referred to as mishandled baggage. So a mishandled bag could be a damaged bag. It could be a bag that does not travel with its passenger. It could be a pilfered bag. And I forget what the fourth category is. But it should be coming up. So in terms of, I know that there were also recently publications around OR Tambo having double the rate of baggage pilferage than other airports of its size. And we were not aware of the source of that information. But naturally, if it gets reported and people read it and are not aware that there are no statistics for such, it becomes difficult to try and correct it in the media. So if a statement is made and it is reported in a particular way, especially in the press, then it is almost taken as the truth, and it becomes very difficult to try and explain. Having said that, this is just a global categorization of mishandled bags, and globally. There are over 25 million. These are statistics that come from IATA. There are over 25 million mishandled bags on an annual basis. And even though there's been a 23% improvement, but that is more. That is quite a lot of bags. I'm sure you will agree. And again, just the very last bullet there. There is no single international benchmark for baggage pilferage. The benchmark is for mishandled bags. In fact, I would encourage members to Google mishandled baggage statistics, and they have some very, very interesting links on that website that will give more information around how global a problem this is. But it's to get a statistic of where you fare against pilfered bags becomes very difficult. Having said that, I'd just like to respond to the article that you read, Chairperson, about access figures not being true. We derive our statistics from the airlines that report. So our source for our statistics, which I will bring up later, our source is really the airlines that report. There were recently reports by some airlines that they don't have a problem. Other airlines say that they have a very, very serious problem. But we can only get our information from the airlines that report it, because there is no legislative requirement. Unlike within the European Union, they have legislated that each airline must report, and they actually have a website wherein they report on the baggage handling statistics of each airline. That's really for competitive purposes, so that passengers can have a choice. So it became such a problem in Europe that they said, no, we want for each airline now to report, such that if I want to fly airline A versus airline B, because they've got a better performance track record in a particular environment, I have that choice as the passenger. So I'd like to agree with that statement, that we can only report on what gets reported to us. That is what we can take as the true picture in terms of what is happening. That's just, and I won't go through each and every one of these, but just to explain the process of your experience as a passenger. In terms of our responsibility as ATSA, we provide the baggage infrastructure. So we provide the conveyor belts that take your bag from the time you check in down to a basement, and then those bags get taken and put into the airplane. We license what are called ground handling companies, and I hope I'm not going to confuse people. We license the companies that do the baggage handling on behalf of the airline. The airline then contracts with that company to do the baggage handling on its behalf. So the statement that you made, Chairperson, that there is a need to work together is absolutely true, because there is AXA that provides the sortation system. There is the airline that you hand your bag over to, but in turn that airline then hands that bag to a ramp handler that takes that bag on behalf of the airline, puts it into the aircraft. When you get to OR Tambo, it'll take it out of the hold of the aircraft and put it onto the baggage belt. So therein, there are three players as it is. And to say that we don't have a problem, especially at OR Tambo, we recognize that we have a problem. And we recognize that from way back in about 2007. To date, we spend about 7 million rands annually on a security company to assist. Contractually, we have made the resource available to the airline to say, we will pay for the security company to secure the bag from the time it's checked in to the time it's put on the aircraft. But it's equally your responsibility to work with that security company. We can't impose them upon you, but we can certainly make that resource available. So we have been paying this money for a number of years now. We have both overt and covert cameras that we've installed in the baggage makeup area. There's a number of things that we have done to try and improve baggage privilege. But if they, and we have formed equally at OR Tambo, and some of these good stories never get out. We equally work with the airlines we work with SAA, we work with Comair, we work with the international airlines, we work with we work with all of the domestic airlines. We have what is called a baggage management committee that reviews the statistics. And that reports, but then again, if there is incorrect or inconsistent reporting, one will never know the extent of the problem. It'll just be informed by what one reads in the media, or what one's personal experience has been. These are, again, some of the security initiatives that we've implemented at OR Tambo, and I will not go through each and every one and explain them. But there are a number of things that we have done to try and improve the security. Certain airlines, for an example, have they have installed cameras in the belly of the aircraft where the bags actually get put. You know, Comair made the example that their employees use thick gloves. Some airlines have actually put cameras in. If I can just give this example, sometimes when you're traveling on SAA and they believe, or on Comair, and they believe that your hand luggage is too big, they will take it at the entrance to the aircraft and they'll go and put it in the belly of the aircraft. And some airlines have recognized that, no, if this bag is coming from upstairs, that means that it does have valuables in it. So some airlines have taken the initiative to actually install cameras. Other airlines have taken the initiative to, when you come out of the belly, they have an independent company that searches you. So there are airlines that have come a long way, and we must recognize that, in making sure that they have got specific initiatives. And there are others that have challenges. And, you know, I mentioned OR Tambo being the hub. OR Tambo has the majority of the bags that travel through our entire network at ACSA. So naturally, one would expect that a lot of the problems would manifest themselves there. But they are initiatives. This is just some of the initiatives that we try and, with, together with our stakeholders, the airlines, the security companies, the baggage handling companies, that we have tried to implement. But, you know, we have said equally to the airlines, technically a passenger, and I don't want to go into technicalities, but contractually, a passenger, when they buy a ticket and they check in, they hand over their luggage to you as an airline. So it is, and we are more than happy to work with you to see what additional measures need to be put in place to ensure that, to ensure the security of the bags and to ensure that they don't get interfered with or pilfered. But it is really important that we work together with the airlines, but in certain instances, they are to take the lead because ultimately they understand their processes better than we would, better than you as a passenger would, because they understand what contractual arrangements they have in place. But I must emphasize the willingness to work with all of the stakeholders is there. And whilst we believe we have come a long way, we believe that one bag stolen is one bag too many. And that is our attitude. Just by way of example, at OR Tambo, we probably do, between arriving and departing bags, we probably do over 2 million bags per month. So whilst the volumes are huge, but the more we work at decreasing the opportunities to steal baggage, the better off we're going to be. But just by way of an example, I think it's coming up on the next slide. I will raise it when it does come up. One of the challenges that we believe we have is there is no regulation or process that forces airlines to publish the extent of their problem. So whilst one airline will say we don't have a problem, another will say we do have a problem, you will never really know the extent of that problem unless you know, look, how many bags did you handle this month and how many claims did you receive or how many incidents were reported? So we also depend on, and this I think goes to the article that you read, Jen, our information can only come from the airline. There is no way that we have a system of knowing that this bag or this airline processed these number of bags today. Because when you check those bags, when you check them into an airline. So we believe we need to move to an environment where there is more transparency. And if there are things that we need to do to publish how well we are doing, we are more than ready to tell the public how well we are doing. But we must understand the source of the problem. So the second bullet is critical. just less than 3 years ago, at OR Tambo, people were caught pilfering bags, but owing to a technicality in the legislative system, the judge would say, but the complainant is not here for me to prosecute. Yes, here is Bongani, here is the bag, but whose bag is this, and who's complaining to say this bag has been stolen? Invariably, that person has gone to London, or they've gone to DRC, or they've gone to America. So that has been a problem. We went through a process wherein we brought the magistrates through our the Kempton Park magistrate through our airport, such that they begin to understand the nature of the problem. You will not always have a complainant on a baggage pilferage incident. And this was a migration from when we catch you stealing a bag, we'll simply take your permit. We wanted to take it one step further to prosecute. I think the first successful cases were reported in September 2009. So now we have migrated to a point where the magistrates equally understand that, you know, the person who is there to complain that their cell phone or their laptop is missing has probably left. But this is the person who was caught with that laptop, and it is not their laptop. They're not able to prove that it's their laptop. So there have also been these technical challenges that we have been trying to get around. We've been also working with the Department of Justice to actually have a court on site at OR Tambo, such that we don't wait for Monday morning if we catch you on a Saturday night to prosecute you. It's almost instantaneously there and then. To begin to send the message that there is a zero-tolerance approach towards this problem. And it's not just catching you and getting rid of your permit and blacklisting you from the airport. So it is work in progress. However, one must recognize that it is such a personal thing to have something taken from you that it becomes immaterial that you're working with the courts or that you're blacklisting people from your system. My iPad has been stolen. That is what has happened to me. What you are doing as AXA or the airlines or the courts is really immaterial. And we recognize that it's very, very personal to have something taken out of your suitcase or your bag. This is just we try and identify. This must be read against roughly. We probably do about within the system. We probably do about, I would say, between Kinshasa, Cape Town, and Kinshasa and Cape Town and OR Tambo, we probably do about between 5 and 6 million arriving bags. And so you see per month, that is. So sometimes you can have up to 600 incidents. This is when we're moving into 2010. And we were very, very successful in bringing those incidents down. That's a very good question. Why not now? It's because we had an oversupply of police officers all over the airport. Now, after the World Cup, when we reviewed, because we also took the view, Chairperson, that, you know, during the World Cup, everything worked. There were no lines at customs. There were no lines at immigration. Your baggage came on time. You know, there was no congestion into and out of our airport. But I think that was because there was just an oversupply of police. There was an oversupply of AXA employees. There was an oversupply of airline employees. There was an oversupply of metro police officers at all of our airports. And when we did the post-2010 review, it became apparent that just the police alone did not allow any of their members to go on leave. So to expect for that to happen through the years is really just impractical to resource at an airport. So, yes, we are talking to the police to have more members deployed at the airport, but, you know, we recognize that there are other priorities elsewhere in the country. There are other priorities for the police in other parts of the country, and it cannot just be that we expect them to be at our airports. That's just an indication of the, and I'm sorry that slide is so small, but there down the slide is the companies wherein some of these employees have been caught in 2010 and 2011. Last year, it was a total of 35. This year, we've already dismissed up to 30 of them. Your article made mention of something that is very interesting for me, wherein the person was talking about the person who travels between OR Tambo and Dar es Salaam, and the bag cannot be tampered with in Dar es Salaam because they just do not have the time. Now, these are pictures of bags. This is a flight from London. This is a flight from New York, Washington, London, Washington. These are arriving bags. There is a bag from London that has been opened. But naturally, the perception is because it was discovered at OR Tambo, it happened at OR Tambo. There is a bag from Munich. There is a bag from Washington. There is a bag from New York. So oftentimes the perception is that, and maybe it's because of the negative publicity, specifically around OR Tambo and baggage processes, that people attribute the theft to be at OR Tambo. Recently, Cape Town hosted the... Who was the wrestler that was here? The wrestler? Anyway, there was a tournament here of wrestlers that came from the state. And they came via Washington, through OR Tambo, and they came from different parts of the state, and they came to Cape Town. And apparently one of these very well-known wrestlers tweeted that his T-shirt of his had been taken, or something had been taken out of his bag. And the immediate reaction was that it happened here in Cape Town. It can't have happened anywhere else. It must have happened here. Now, despite a review of our CCTV footage to follow that specific bag and the route that it followed, we were unable to trace that it happened here. But because it happens to be a very famous person in the wrestling world, who when they tweet, a lot of people that follow him will naturally start reporting that, oh, there's a problem with this gentleman at Cape Town International Airport. This is quite a busy slide, but this is really to show that we do pay attention to issues of service at our airport. And this is for OR Tambo, Cape Town, and Kinshasa. And this green line, or this purple line here, is really an indication of how... Oh, sorry, let me step back a second. When I speak to service, there is a global survey, there's a global index against which we benchmark ourselves. So OR Tambo will compare itself to an airport of a similar size. Likewise will Cape Town. Likewise will Kinshasa. And there's been a steady increase in the rating over the years. And we hope for this line to continue going up at all of our airports. So, and this measures not just the AXA performance. It measures the airline performance. It measures the immigration's performance. It measures the customs performance. It measures the car rental, everybody who offers a service at the airport, even the retailers, the Woolworths or the Mug and Bean that offer a service, how well are they at offering a service? So this is just to really emphasize that issues of service, because we understand the role that certainly our international airports play, especially towards our international arriving passengers, are issues that we must pay a lot of attention to. And we try, and we even have recognition and reward programs at the end of each year when we recognize stakeholders who have excelled, whether you're a government agency or whether you're a retail shop or you're an airline, and we have different categories because we want to emphasize the need to continuously improve service. And this was, Chairperson, if we were to go back 5 or 6 years ago, when you arrived at an airport, everybody was blaming everybody else. When you got off a flight at OR Tambo and there were only 2 immigration officers, immigration would blame AXA because AXA hasn't provided the information for the people. So it was really just a situation where everybody was blaming everybody. And we have really tried to emphasize the need for us as an airport community to take collective responsibility for people who come through our airport. You know, we often fight with the airlines. The airline would say the passenger is mine. We would say, no, the passenger is coming through our airport, they're mine. We have now migrated to a point where we recognize that we both would not have a business if it wasn't for the passengers that come through our airport. So we owe it to them to pay attention to issues of service. And likewise, the Woolworths that is there would not be there if there were no feet traveling through our airport. So our ability to ensure that those people have a pleasant experience wherever they're going through is going to determine whether or not they're going to be our goodwill ambassadors going forward. And again, this is just, I know it needs some time to explain, but we also monitor, and this gets published on our website, issues of airline performance. And by performance, let me restrict myself to on-time departures. Airlines that publish that they will leave at 2 o'clock and actually fly at 2 o'clock. We monitor that for all of the domestic carriers. And we've now, this is an area that we're actually very proud of. With the airlines, we have now moved to an environment wherein we are very transparent around which airline performs well, which airlines leave on time, and which airlines don't leave on time. And we actually set, as an industry, we set ourselves as a benchmark to say, this is the target that we're aiming for. And I think Cape Town, you're aiming for 87%. Cape Town's aiming at an on-time departure of 87%. And this is one area where we want to continuously push up the envelope as it relates to issues of performance. And this is, again, just a testimony from one of them, but that's an example from Comair, a testimony from them with regards to how important this has been for them and their on-time performance. So this is certainly an area that we believe we've made progress, but there's still obviously an opportunity to improve. That then brings me to the end of the presentation, Chair. I'm more than happy to take questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Let's look how we are doing on time. We were supposed to have tea, and then because the issue of the committee staff report that may take not a lot of time, let us go on until about 11:45, and then wait for tea, and then look at the other items of the agenda. For purposes of allowing you enough time to ask questions.
Thanks, Chair. A short question and then a longer one. On this slide which talked about baggage mishandling statistics, I'm just doing this from memory, but there's a figure of 25 billion bags and 25 million of them mishandled, and then you've got a benchmark of 4 per 1,000 passengers. Can you explain the discrepancy? Because the first statistic at the top of the page works out to roughly 1%, and the one in red, the benchmark is 0.5%. So unless what you're saying is the benchmark is half of that of the actual occurrence. So that's the short question. The wider question I'd like to ask is, I mean, obviously this is a very detailed and very clearly presented presentation, and we accept that everybody that comes to this committee, I think, strives to be as accurate as possible and doesn't try to mislead us, and I don't think anyone's misleading us today. The problem we have is that we have, within a few weeks, two presentations that are saying two different things. And that's why I find it very hard to understand what's really happening here. I take the point that people are loose with statistics, and when they talk about luggage pilfering, they're perhaps talking about baggage mishandling and vice versa. So I do understand that. But the SAA presentation that we got was unambiguous. It said luggage pilfering is out of control. That's a direct quote. Now, I mean, we can't take that back. So either it is out of control or it isn't out of control. The presentation we got today seems to indicate that it's not out of control, and that in fact it's getting better. But then one struggles to understand what SAA was trying to say to us. Now, a couple of years ago, we had a presentation also from AXA, I believe, where we didn't get this type of presentation today. And what was said again, quite unambiguously, was that in those days, the incidence was double the international norm. I remember that very clearly. And there was that now famous statement about 25% of baggage handlers are corrupt and 50% are corruptible, and then every 6 months, they're corrupted the 50 and then people have to leave. And, I mean, that's now got wide coverage, that comment that was made by AXA. So I just have a sense, Chair, that, you know, it almost depends on who the presenter is. And I really would like this presentation to be the one we can believe in, and maybe things have changed a lot since the last one. But it is very hard for the committee to really work out what's going on when there's such divergent presentations made. I'd like some clarity on that as to why there are these possible misconceptions, or maybe it's just the numbers being misunderstood. I don't know. And the last question is, is to do with the non-reportage, because it's a bit like the rape statistics. We all know that the majority of rapes are not reported, and therefore those particular count statistics are very unreliable. I mean, I've had my luggage pilfered a number of times, and the one thing you never do at OSHA is when you travel, for example, from Cape Town to ORT to Nelspruit, as I used to do on a regular basis for 5 years when I represented that province, you never check your baggage through. You always pull it out, and then you recheck it in, because time does seem to be the problem. The more time that people have to get your luggage, the more likely it is to be broken into. So you never want to have your luggage where you're the first person on the plane and there's maybe an hour or half an hour before the next person checks in. So you must try and put your luggage in while there's a rush. Everybody knows that, who travels frequently. And the one time I actually went off my proven routine was during the World Cup, when I did check my luggage through, and I knew after I'd done it that I'd made a mistake. And sure enough, when I got to King Shark on the other side, my Bafana shirt had been taken out of my bag. And that was during a time where we had a high police presence. So I just wonder how many people, interesting to go around this committee and ask how many people had baggage pilfered and didn't report it. Because I stopped reporting it after the third time because, you know, what happens? You know, the only reason anyone reports petty crime in this country at the moment is for insurance claims. You have no expectation that it's going to be solved. I mean, police have an impossible caseload and have more serious things to worry about, like murder and rape. So they don't look at petty crime. And I would suspect that many, many people have given up. And therefore, as has been pointed out today, AXA can only rely on the statistics that they're given. But if the passenger doesn't report it to the airline, the airline can't report it to AXA. And I suspect that what you're reading in the newspaper, Chair, as you did in the beginning of this meeting, is actually correct, that there's a vast amount of underreportage. And as such, there may not be an improvement. It just isn't reported anymore. So I'd like some clarity on that, because I have a sense that there's more underreportage than there was in previous years.
Then Jome, then Bamu Gwanya, then Manganye, then Zela.
Thank you, Chief. And let me also thank the presentation. But mine is only few clarifications, especially on licensing. Licensing. This issue of licensing, because there are many role players here. There's this airline, there's a company, a security company, and on this issue of the packaging. And really, I don't get it clearly the issue of licensing, who's supposed to give the authority to what, and finally, because at the end of the day, the PEC is lost also, and the item are lost in a PEC, and a layman will never go to that extent of the licensing, the three companies, three parties involved in the PEC. Lastly, Chair, when we started to fly, we normally have this baggage strings that used to be given to, when you fly your aircraft, they give you to lock your bags. Those black cables, yes, I don't know that stuff. But nowadays, don't get them. They say, yeah, they're finished. That's the answer. It's finished, and that's the answer. They'll never finish. And my recommendation is, Chair, if ASCA can really wanted to assist us as a recommendation, if you can look at the issue of these people who are ripping our backs, because the other element or the other challenge is that they are very expensive. To rip one bag, you pay 50 rand. And other people cannot afford that, really. Can't we have something on your side maybe that can assist to have ripping system that is cheaper or that affordable to the people to be able to rep their things, because those cable things are no more there, and we'll continuously get this thing of the problem of the backs. But I think if we can have better or affordable charge for that, this thing of the ripping, it will assist us maybe. Those are my concerns and section.
I think it's just I think I would also like to add my voice in appreciating the presentation. Quite clear. But we still have questions all the same. On the question of the airport tax and the steep rise in the airport tax, I wanted to find out, you did explain the reasons why it is so, it is steep, that I understand. But I wanted to find out whether you are holding any discussions, for instance, with the Department of Transport, you know, to make them aware of this problem, of you not being able to raise your prices such that, you know, they rise smoothly at a time when the infrastructure is not yet ready. You have to wait until it is completed, and therefore now the price becomes, I think the price rises very steeply. Are there any discussions with the Department of Transport? Secondly, the question of security and control of baggage pilferage in terms of legislation. You say we have no legislation for that, but you quoted that in the European Union there is legislation to that effect. I wanted to find out, if there were to be legislation, would it be a country legislation, or is it better legislation for the whole region, for example? Yeah, and if that is the case, whichever is the case, is there any discussion towards, you know, looking at the possibility of services legislation that is among the relevant departments? Now, thirdly, Chairperson, as for pilferage of baggage and the mishandling of the baggage, our suitcases, we put it in, it is still it's okay, but by the time we get back home, something was broken, even if it has not been opened, but something was broken. In 1 month, I think I have lost actually two suitcases. One of them was really a very good one, but I can't use it anymore because, you know, by the time I got to the airport, the wheels were off, there's a hole in it, and the other one, the handle was gone, and something else, and something else. So I'm just saying all of us have got stories about that. But I do understand and appreciate the fact that unless we report, under everybody's report, I don't think you can get your statistics correct. And I don't think that we are, all of us, going to report. Don't have the time. Sometimes you have to catch another plane, another flight. If not, you only discover it when you get home. This is that, this is what has happened. So, it's just a question of all of us working together and the airports, the companies working harder to ensure that, you know, our luggages are handled, our baggage is handled properly by the staff. It may seem a very small thing, one man job out of maybe 2 billion people, that's really nothing. But to me, it's the individual, I'm thinking of the tourist now, you see, it's a lot. So I think we should look at it in a humane way. What should be the approach? Now, I travel a lot between East London and Cape Town, or East London and Joburg. And I'm just wondering why East London, for example, don't display, you know, the destination on the board. They've got the board, but they hardly ever display that this gate is Johannesburg, this gate is Cape Town, and so on and so forth. Time and again, people have got to run to the staff to find out whether I am in this gate or in that gate. It's all right for me. I'm used to it. It's my airport, although it can be inconvenient sometimes. But thinking of a tourist who is not used to this London, I think that is not fair. And I think it's just the carelessness of the staff. We just take it for granted. But why is it that AXA in East London, sorry, does not ensure that this happens? Some of us travel so frequently in that area. But we come used to, you know, like the olden days when you had to run up and down checking whether this is the correct train or this is not the correct train. I think we should be saved for that. Now, on the question of the crisis that Mr. Kwari is talking about, of this working team, there's a lot of abuse now, you know, with that system. The other day, I found myself paying 100 rand just to wrap up, you know, very small. I had too many pieces, I wanted to put them together. And this guy charges me. I didn't ask him how much he was going to charge me. I thought it was 50 rand all round. And she just says 100 rand. What could I do? The plane is about to leave. I pay that 100. It's a very bitter, you know, feeling. I'm just wondering how much, for instance, people who are foreign in this country get exploited. So I think on the question of regulating, we will be helping with the travelers, including the tourists themselves, if, for instance, they put it on the plane. Otherwise, I think it is. It is in some areas. We don't get out, and all our Tambo, we can't get out of them. People are now beginning to get closer. Oh, yes, I just have one question. You know, sometimes you find your bed open, but there's nothing taken. Some people have said to me, oh, maybe you had something in the suitcase that was dangerous, and the security may have opened it just to check. I just wanted to find out whether this is true. And if it is, are the security people allowed to open the bag without informing the owner? Thank you very much.
Next. Pamukwani, you are the next.
Thank you. The echo is loud enough in applause of the presentation. And also, I want to say, Chair, I'm glad you have come across that newspaper article, because I had made a cutting of it myself. However, looking at or listening to the presentation, it does appear that APSA is a big company. They think big. They talk of international benchmarkings. They talk of high volumes, spikes and so on, you know. For a traveler, those things are irrelevant. Because if you are traveling and face the horror of lost luggage, it's so traumatic that you cannot say we don't benchmark or this and that. I am just, and also people meet so such animosity from the staff and the attitudes and sometimes nonchalant, you know, appearances about your lost baggage. You are, in fact, imposing on the staff, and you are a nuisance. I am saying, what about actually adopting the systems that the other airlines who seem to have a low incidence of pilferage, adopting also further and above what they present or they implement, you also involve or you introduce the other safety measures the other airlines are introducing or are practicing. That is just my opinion, because we cannot talk about mishandling and pilferage as the same thing, because those are two different horrors. Like there's also, if your bag is opened and nothing is taken, it means somebody has had access into your bag and you don't know what they have put into your handbag, and you get the confrontation by police on the other side when somebody has actually interfered with your bag. It is a security risk. The other thing is, I'm again concerned about the training of staff. I do appreciate that the, you know, APSA has got a lot of role players. They go Comair or Air Chefs or Menzies and all those people. I don't know how they get licensed, because they're all role players in within the airport. Just that now is besides the baggage. The baggage question. I'm just talking about the treatment of tourists. And by they are badly treated, or passengers are badly treated by the staff that is within the operation. Whether it is the Menzies problem or it is Comair problem, but the thing is they are all under the licensing of APSA or the permission of APSA. They are role players, therefore, in this matter. You find that we are questioning the level of training towards your staff. We are questioning their human relations attitudes. We are also questioning the handling of disabled people in the airport. I don't know whether it is AXA's responsibility or Menzies' responsibility or whatever's responsibility, but you find that, especially in Cape Town, it is the worst place to receive a disabled person. You find that there's no provision. People are in the system. But you find that there is no reception in Cape Town. If a passenger travels from Durban, if they come to Cape Town, people don't want to work, especially if the passenger is a late arrival. You find that people don't want to work, and immediately they see somebody coming out of the PAU, you find that people are running away into little corners, and you stand there not knowing who's going to take it. Or if you are compassionate, you actually, as a fellow passenger, you have to help a disabled person to get into the luggage carousels or wherever. But the handling of disabled people is really horrific. Even on takeoff, the handling of passengers, it's like people don't book and they don't state, but you find that they are not handled properly. And they are dumped there sometimes. You find that check-in. They can't check in because there's nobody to push them into the check-in lines. The people have scattered. They've run away. So please do look into that. I don't know whose responsibility it is, but it is horrible. And as for your bus, that PAU bus, please modify it. You say you are reaching international standards, but yo, Tina, in South Africa, that thing is horrible. It looks like those trucks from the abattoirs that hang these carcasses. That is what it looks like. So please refine that thing and make it at least user friendly. Yeah, it has got miserable chairs inside. It has got this, you know, and that, but it is not comfortable. It looks like something else. Please do look into it. The attitude of staff, ground staff. I don't know whether that is your responsibility. You find that things don't go right, they are queues and so on, and people are just wallowing around leisurely, not caring, because they are at tea. They are at this. Maybe labor relations will take over that, but it becomes very, very problematic when you are in a hurry and you find that there are people who are just not interested in their work. The attitude, Chairperson, is very horrible. From most of the operators. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mine is just a small question. The mishandling of bags. Last time, when I say last time, is a year ago. These people where you are reporting when your bag is mishandled, they were always there. But nowadays, when you report to them, they will go and they won't return back to you until you lost confidence and you go with your broken bag. So it's upon the shoulder of AFSA to make sure that the whereby you are the one who's superseding. Make sure that those people were relevant at that time, but now they are no longer there. So if they can come back and take the reports when people are reporting, and also to give a feedback, to say your back, we can repair it because of 1, 2, 3. I think it will suffice. Secondly, I'm talking about the one, I don't know if it also falls under you, that one of the on time. I understand what you mean about 15 minutes at the day and whatever. I want to highlight my plight or the incident that I've got from the Cape Town Airport. I stay in the flight for 3 hours. Without being told that this flight is not going. When we were taken out of the flight, we didn't get a flight to go to Joburg. We get the last flight. They say all the flights are full. So I don't know whether it falls to, but the courtesy of saying this flight is broken or this flight is not in a good way to can fly. If you inform people, but not to lock the doors, sitting there, and then you think about something. So I think it's the courtesy of information, I think, is key. Even things are not going well, but when you inform people that this thing is what is happening, I should the people will understand, because you can do otherwise. Thank you very much.
Yes, that would be with the airline. Yes, Mama Uzigala.
Chairperson, thank you very much that today we hear from Accra. I've long been waiting just to hear from Accra that the time has come. I may get the baby. Mr. Masego, thank you very much for your presentation. Listening to your presentation, I heard about baggage theft in O.R. Tambo, that it has been reduced to a certain percentage. Good enough. And you did explain that, well, O.R. Tambo is different from the rest. Why? Because I feel there are those connections, you know, hence it's overloaded. But now, my question is, is there any time whereby the wrongdoers are found and persecuted? Because I haven't heard of that, you know, that at a certain stage, at 1 year, we did found one or two those who were brought to book. Secondly, Chairperson, I was listening to Mr. Masego when he was telling us about the conveyor belt that takes the baggage to the taxi, the conveyor belt. I remember when I check in, immediately there's a conveyor belt but now I don't know how it works further than where the spot where I am, and I would love just to get that education. And the conveyor belt that brings the baggage to the passengers. There's a question I would like to ask. I'm worried. I'm not a bit worried. I am worried. Maybe you can explain to us what actually caused the delay. Because I'm telling you, you will wait there to between 10 to 15 minutes. The baggage is not there. Maybe the very conveyor belt hasn't started moving. I'm just asking just to know, because it's good to know. And thirdly, I've heard my colleagues, and I'm with them, complaining about the damage that is done with their bags, their luggage. It's broken, it's what. I don't know, maybe we can get that one from you. If you find that your bag has been damaged, it's no more the one that, where must you go and report? Because with me, I get to that window, I don't know how you call that window, baggage control or whatever. Yes. I go there and show them my bet. They give me a form. I fill the form. They say, go to Fraser's Estate, wherever Fraser's is. I go there. They exchange. They give me a new one. I don't know whether that practice is still there. Four. I just want to know from
you, Mr. Masego, about the cattle tires, because maybe you can explain to us, is it compulsory for the airport to provide, or is it what? Just courtesy to provide passengers with cable tires, or are we to provide ourselves? Because ngempela I'm not clear now. Because when you get to Cape Town, when you ask for a cable tire, you know they're so surprised. What are you saying? Cable tire from Cape Town? It never happens. We don't get that thing. But now, today, because you are here, you will just try and explain to us how does the cable tire story go about. Thank you. No statement.
Okay, thank you.
Just 1 second.
Thank you. You don't even have 1 minute.
About the vacancies they have, is there organo fully
in fact, I think that no, let us look at time before we ask questions.
No, mine is really short term. It's about the 150,000 jobs to be created. Whether you are saying that these jobs will be created by AXA, or are you talking about, because the slide is about the economy generally. Is this your projection for, and for what period, or for how long? You can understand what? 150,000 jobs to be created.
Over to you, Mr. Mosley.
Thank you very much, members of the Portfolio Committee and Chairperson. I will try and answer the questions as they've been asked. Firstly, the slide up there, I think the most important slide is the second last one. That is the benchmark around which each airline must measure itself in terms of mishandled bags. The airlines through IATA have got what is called a global distribution system that tracks the number of mishandled bags globally. So that is just that the 25 million is just an absolute number. The real number to understand how well an airline is doing against the industry benchmark is the second last bullet. The question was then asked around the report that baggage pilferage is out of control. And my response to that is really, until there is a robust way to measure baggage pilferage and compare it by airline, I don't think I would certainly bear or give much credence to somebody who says it's out of control, because it really must be against a benchmark. Just to give an example, we have at OR Tambo a committee that is convened by the airlines. And as recently as about 3 weeks ago, and they meet, amongst other things, to discuss airline operational issues, but they meet also to discuss issues around baggage. And the chairperson asked the question, but where is the problem with baggage pilferage? Can any airline that believes that they have a serious problem with baggage pilferage please raise their hand? And not a single airline did. Now, whether that is because they don't want to be commercially compromised, or whether in fact there is no problem, is really a matter to be decided upon. We certainly track our statistics based on what gets reported to us, and that's what we've been tracking over the last three financial years. If I can go on to the licensing process. And I'd probably like to start explaining the licensing process in this way. There is this perception sometimes that everything that happens at an airport is an ACSA responsibility. We as ACSA really see ourselves as the conductor of an orchestra. We don't control what the individual people do or the individual role players do. We try and conduct the entire orchestra. Now, I say that because let me move specifically to licensing. We license certain entities to perform various functions. They perform security functions, they provide catering, they provide PAUs, they provide ground handling activities, various functions. Those are really, the licensing is really just to allow them to operate in terms of international practice. The model that we follow is international practice. They then contract with a specific airline for a specific service. So that service could be ground handling, that service could be cargo operations, that service could be PAUs, that service could be busing. That is an individual service level agreement that they have with an individual airline. We do not control those service levels between themselves and the airline. That is a commercial relationship that we have got no control over. So I would just like to explain it in that context. And I know for somebody who is not used to traveling through an airport, sometimes difficult to understand. But just to give you an example, there's only one place that you physically come into contact with an ACSA employee at any airport, and that's at security. There's nowhere else where you interact with an ACSA employee. It is only when you're going through security that that is an ACSA employee. When you park your car, it's not an ACSA employee. When you check in, it's not an ACSA employee. When you go through security, it's an ACSA employee. When you buy the newspaper, it's not an ACSA employee. When you board the aircraft, it's not an ACSA employee. So, and sometimes I know that it's confusing for people to understand that. So if I can respond to the question, for an example, around the cable ties, that was an individual airline initiative. That was not an ACSA initiative. So Comair, for an example, I don't know which airline was providing. Comair may have thought, let us, in response to us being proactive to our passengers, let us provide cable ties. We as ACSA cannot say to each and every airline, it is compulsory for you to provide the cable ties. That is an individual relationship between the airline and yourself. So it is not, unfortunately, something that we could do to say, we are going to be providing cable ties, or we're going to force airlines to provide cable ties to each and every one of their employees. I have taken the comments, and thank you very much, on the cost of the wrapping. And that's something that we will go and look at. And I think that, and I thank you for that. I think it was Manjove who raised the issue of the airport tax. And perhaps if I can just take you to the slide, and I'm sorry I didn't emphasize that. Yes, the Department of Transport has recognized that the way in which ACSA is regulated is not in a way that promotes for transparency, for growth, that provides for ACSA to be able to expand on its infrastructure. So they have embarked on a roadmap to review the regulatory framework, and they hope, we actually as ACSA sit on that committee, they hope that that process is going to be finalized by December. So there's a committee that is chaired specifically by the Director General. If I can also just opportunistically answer your question on the jobs. This 150,000 really relates to not jobs that ACSA is going to create, but the jobs that are going to be created out of airport activity. So out of new airlines, out of new shops, out of cargo operations, and this is over the period 2009 to 2019. That was the estimation by Mott MacDonald. But there's a specific formula that is used. A question then was asked around the reporting of baggage pilferage. If that would be a South Africa-specific initiative, that would probably be initiated by the South African Civil Aviation Authority. Or now that we have got the issues around consumer protection are gaining more and more momentum, perhaps that would be something that can be taken through the we would certainly be in favor of, and in fact we have been for some time saying that, you know, it would be in everybody's interest if there was a system to report on how bad the problem is per airport, to understand where the issues are, to understand if is it an airline-specific problem, and if AXA needs to go away and fix certain things that are unique to them, then we are more than happy to go and fix that. But what we are saying is we would like for there to be more transparency. In the absence of transparency, it's very easy for the left hand to blame the right hand. And the victim, unfortunately, is invariably the passenger. So if there was more transparency around how these whole processes are managed and what the relationships are and who's actually letting the passenger down, then I think we would easier be able to go and fix the problem. A question was asked around, I did take the note on the screens in East London. That is something that we will go away and fix. Thank you very much for that. The issue of bags being open. Nobody, including security, is allowed to open any bag without the presence of the passenger being there. So no bag is allowed to be opened, precisely for the reasons that I think somebody stated, that you get to the other side and there's something in your bag that you haven't put in that you can't account for. It's for that specific reason. A security officer who is screening, and maybe it is this statement is true for an OR Tambo or a Cape Town airport, and probably less true for the smaller airports. At an OR Tambo, the security officer who's screening the bag has got no clue where that bag is within the system. All they see before them is just a screen and an image, and they're supposed to indicate whether or not that image is problematic. They press a button, and that bag gets taken to an independent point to be further inspected. So at no point does at a smaller airport, yes, like East London, or at a George, wherein you've got less traffic, yes, because the bags are screened on a conveyor system manually. But the system is so complex and so hard to handle that it is physically impossible for the security to know where the bags are. And we deliberately make that separation because we don't want them to know which bags are. We just want them to tell us whether or not there's a threat in that bag or there's no threat. That is our responsibility. The issue of the attitude of staff in general, whether it's a check-in, whether it's a baggage inquiry, it is something that we have taken with the airlines. It's unfortunately something that is, like I said, the only point where you will touch us with AXA is security. So we don't have control over the standards, whether it's Comair or Mango or One Time or whoever it is. Those are staff that work specifically for the airline. And I think the point was made earlier, since we license these people, don't we have control over their training standards? There is regulated training that we have got control over. But what we are talking about here is customer service issues. And one would have thought, because I want for you to come back and fly me tomorrow rather than fly my competitor, I would invest quite heavily in customer service. The slide that I showed up there around service quality issues in general, when we announce, each year per airport, we have what is called Service Quality Awards. And why you've seen this graph go up at OR Tambo is because we've gotten to the point where if SAA wins an award over BA Comair, or BA Comair wins an award in the airline category over Mango, it's something that is taken very, very personally. And it is through initiatives of measuring service and actually recognizing service that we're trying to encourage people to pay attention to service issues. It is not something we fully recognize, that it is not something that we can come tomorrow and deliver a solution. We recognize that it is going to be a journey. For an example, generally airports in Asia, Singapore, Malaysia, Hong Kong, the one Incheon in South Korea, they are rated very heavily because they pay a lot of attention. They pay a lot of attention to service issues, and service is very, very dear to them. And this is where this is the journey that we are starting. This is the journey that we have embarked on, and it's something that we do pay a lot of attention to. I think a very important point was made around the airlines that have got. I'm talking baggage privilege, I apologize. The airlines that seem to be doing well, is it possible to take what they're doing, their key learnings from them, and copy with the airlines that are not doing well? That is the logic that we also ask. But because each airline has independent processes, as AXA, I cannot say you will do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 as an airline. Unfortunately, all we are guided by is the international benchmarks that are actually prescribed by IATA. And we have moved from an environment wherein airlines have recognized that there's a lot more that they have to do than what is prescribed by IATA. For an example, the example that you give around the PAUs at Cape Town, I'm glad Dion is here to hear firsthand. These are things that we will take away, and we will make sure that we pay attention to these issues. But in a service environment, it's, you know, it's not, we are very unique in that we are not like a five-star hotel that has a specific service, and if they don't deliver on that service, you won't come back to that hotel. Unfortunately, we have airlines with competing commercial interests. They are low-cost airlines. They are full-service airlines. So they have got competing commercial principles, and you will never find a one-size-fits-all solution in our industry, unfortunately, because we must counterbalance what our requirements are against what the commercial principles are for the airlines. For an example, they will say to us, as they have been saying, airport charges are through the roof, and they are going to stop passengers from flying, and they're going to stop tourists from coming into the country. And we say, just like you are growing your fleet, we need to grow our airports to accommodate your growing business. And because we abide by a user pay principle, then you must be expected to pay for the runway that you land on and for the parking stand that you park on. So we do have these, unfortunately, we do have these competing commercial interests. But I think the airlines are under severe pressure, as we've read in the media, such that today, I mean, for some of the, certainly the private ones, and the commerce of the world will tell you that they expect for the SAAs to operate on commercial principles and not be subsidized by government. And that brings a whole different set of challenges. And perhaps in that set of challenges, customer service gets pushed down the ladder somewhat. We have also, I have taken note of the incidents wherein people have been stuck on flights for hours and hours on end. In fact, the portfolio committee chairman for transport actually once called me because she had a similar example. She was bumped off a flight, and having been bumped off the flight, She was told that she could only take the last flight, and she could not understand why. When there were other people, when there were many flights in between, she was told that she had to take the last flight. But it's something that we did take up particularly with FAA. And if I can move on towards the end, Chair. Oh, sorry, before I move on. I didn't understand the question around the organogram.
Oh.
Is whether all vacancies are filled or not.
Yes, thank you, Chair.
Vacancies, just for clarity, vacancies at AXA.
Yes.
Okay. We have, we have quite a high turnover in the areas that are lower paying. For an example, people don't like to work shifts. If they can get a job where they can work from 9 to 5, they would prefer that than a job wherein they work shifts and they prefer to work weekends. So we generally have a vacancy rate of about between 3 and 5% on an annual basis. Yes, but this is against the backdrop of we employ just over 2,500 people. The slide there showed you that they are at OR Tambo, there are over 30,000 people that work at OR Tambo. Only 1,200 of that 30,000 work for AXA. Likewise, at Cape Town, I don't know, I think you've got 17? No, how many? Total.
Total. We probably getting close to 20.
Cape Town is approaching 20,000. They only employ, AXA only employs about 500 staff. So it's important that we clarify these things because not all of the employees at the airport are AXA staff. If I can then move towards the end, and I'm sorry the slide was not that clear, but it asked of the wrongdoers, are they prosecuted? These are the companies that they work for. These are the numbers of people within the organizations last year that were prosecuted. These are the number this year that were prosecuted. So the short answer is yes, the wrongdoers are prosecuted. The issues of the conveyor belts that deliver the bags on arrival, it is something that we monitor and manage. Oftentimes you will find that you will get off a flight at OR Tambo, and there will be one bag that goes round and round and round, and the rest of the bags take a longer time to come. And that's something that we are addressing with the ramp handlers. We measure, as part of the service standards, we measure things such as the time that it takes to deliver bags. So it's the time that it takes to deliver the first bag and the time that it takes to deliver the last bag. We do measure those. And equally, when we have these awards, the ground handling companies, we measure them specifically on that. And yes, in some environments it has been problematic, but it is something that we are paying attention to. The damaged bags. The damaged bags are really a relationship between you and the airline from whom you've purchased. So I know that you made the example of Eastgate at OR Tambo. And SAA may have that particular relationship with that particular entity, whereas Comair has got a totally different process, whereas Mango has got a totally different process. And unfortunately, we cannot, again, have a one-size-fits-all because airlines have got competing commercial interests, so what works for this airline may not necessarily work for another airline. And so, again, the issue of cable ties, if Airline A was providing cable ties a year, half, 2 years ago, and for whatever reason they decided that they're not going to continue, they cannot be compelled to provide for the cable ties. But in closing, Chair, we have, thank you very much for some of the very important feedback on things that we need to take back and go and fix at the airport.
Thank you very much, Mr. Masaruk. But as a way of closing, let me just quote two experiences. I was in Durban yesterday, and I had left my cell phone in the car, and then I was not sure whether the cell phone was in my bag or in my car. I received full support from a lady, the Australian Home Banker in Durban, Kim Shaba Airport. And I appreciated the patience and the type of service I received there. That was yesterday. And then about 6 months ago, I was locked in a lift here in Cape Town for about 1.5 hours. It was dark. I phoned the numbers inside the lift. There was no response. I phoned my secretary, and then the airline left me out fairly early, about 1 hour early, but stuck in a lift and could not get the flight for more than an hour. Now it's about less than 6 months. I don't know the exact date. This type of service really is unacceptable, and I don't know whether it is AXA or whoever is responsible. And if we license people, I think we license people precisely because we want to have control over them. If they don't behave properly, we withdraw the license. I think South Africans are too lax when it comes to control. I mean, people have got to know that AXA is in charge, where AXA is in charge. Because really, to say things are not happening because perhaps it's like controlling an orchestra. If tenor is out of tune, the conductor is going to say, no, tenor, let us stop. Go and practice for the event. It's in 3 days' time, but in tune. Because what I realize with government institutions in general, we are not. If you have worked in a private company environment, you see the difference. The style of management is too lax, and junior employees behave as if there's no boss in the company, and this has got to be stopped by most of the government departments. This is what we experience. I mean, it's a common experience. And it's mainly from junior employees. You report them to senior employees because the level of concern is not that much as well, because perhaps we don't know what is the cause. I'm not blaming AXA as such. But we have noted that people don't take responsibility because the guys at the top that don't get fired. In general, in the scheme of things in the public sector. But we are not saying that this is the responsibility of AXA. But I think as a team, AXA cannot do it alone, definitely. But as a team, AXA and the airlines and the other people, I think there has to be, we've got to work out a way. There should be penalties for some type of behavior. There should be incentives for other types of behavior. Because it cannot be left to AXA or to SAE. And then this thing, as Mr. Grumbach has said, of not getting information that has been well correlated. You get this information from this source, from SAA. You get another information from AXA. And then without information from an independent source, I understand that has been attributed to a lack of transparency in your slide. But at the end of the day, there has to be a way of attributing actions or linking actions, particular actions, good or bad, to someone. Because the management cannot work in any other way you are accountable because you are my senior. Well, the other one is accountable, but with that accountability, in exchange, I have control. And these are the things that these are the dynamics that we've got to try and wake up and work on. The team spirit, whether we like one another between AXA and SAA, we've got no choice. We've got to work with the team. Passengers, as you have heard here, everything now has been to AXA, whether it is somebody that you have, it is SAE's fault, it is the fault of that company and so forth. It just comes to AXA if AXA is here. If SAA was here also, it was going to be the same thing. At the end of the day is that passengers do not discriminate. And let us find a way of improving for the sake of good experiences. Good experiences resulting in higher numbers in tourism. Higher numbers in tourism resulting in inclusive growth, accelerated growth, and more decent jobs and more sustainable livelihoods. And because it is in the interest of all of us. And the issue of the resourcing, our resources, I think whoever is responsible for security, we say that because in the World Cup we were oversupplied with the resources. I think between the resources we are having and the oversupply, there is the right resources. And whether the question now becomes whether that should come from the private sector, from AXA and such companies, or it should come from government. It's an issue of negotiation between the leadership, all the leadership in the companies working in that environment, and the police, private, that is SAPS. But it could also indicate that we need private security that needs to be paid, and then depending on the issue of the destination. Or perhaps talking to the department to try and assist in as far as resourcing is concerned. The issue of not paying at the time when now you start actually are actually building. What did you call it? Pre-funding. Yeah, the smoothing out that thing should be coming from the authority that says it should not happen, because otherwise you are perceived. I mean, by any measure, anybody, administrative costs of more than 35%, and then in total resulting in 70%, is perceived to be too steep and too high, and can only be perceived to be coming from people who are economically illiterate. You cannot have an inflation at about 3 or 6%, and then be perceived to be increasing prices at 70%. It's not in line with planning, proper planning, because we plan around inflation. And now someone, perhaps the one that refuses that we should be having pre-funding or whatever, does not understand the economic implications. A good economy runs around good economic planning. But good economic planning runs around good economic forecasting. Good economic forecasting runs around the economic figures that are provided to project the future as experienced in the past. You experience the past, you project the future, and you look at the present figure. So it's these things that we together have got to as a country, to try and improve on. Our task is oversight. If we see this weakness, we've got to pronounce that there is a weakness. It is our duty. It's our task. without criticizing anyone, but you've got to point out that, no, we see, we think that there is a weakness here, depending on the evidence before us. But having said that, Mr. Masaiko and Mr. Lutz, before we close, perhaps we can have your last word and then close this meeting. But we've got to point out problems.
Chairperson and members of the committee, thank you very much for this opportunity. We fully agree with the sentiments that you've shared in your closing remarks. Ultimately, we have got equally a role to play in trying to build and grow this country. And so we recognize that whatever we need to do to put our shoulder to the wheel, we must go ahead and do that. And yes, we have highlighted from 2007 the challenges as we saw them back then with economic regulation. Unfortunately, that's something that falls out of our control. The infrastructure is there. We have built it now. And again, I must emphasize that it was not built for the World Cup. It was built as part of a broader plan to grow the economy of this country and to create jobs at a time when we were growing at double digits. So, and I fully agree that the challenges that we see now are just a manifestation of what we forecasted back in 2007. Those were the rules. When they were set, we indicated that there are problems with these rules, because when we deliver this infrastructure and there's a spike, everybody's going to be unhappy with us with tariffs, and rightfully so. But we are where we are. I think the department has recognized that there is a challenge in that regard. And I fully accept your comments with regards to the need to pay more attention to service issues. And it's not just, in my view, it is not just with AXA and SAA. It is AXA, it is SAA, it is the ground handlers, it is customs, it is immigration. It's everybody who provides a service. We are, and after all, we are in the service industry. And we are here to provide a service. And, you know, it's trying to inculcate the culture that says, if there was nobody to travel, none of us would be here. Whether you're customs, immigration, SAA, one time, Kulula, Menzies, whoever you are. So the more we pay attention to service issues, the better experience people are going to have. I fully take your comment on if one member of the orchestra is not performing to scratch, then they need to be sent away to prepare. And like I said, it is a journey. And the committee members may remember the days of equity aviation. You know, from where we've come with equity aviation and the challenges that we had specifically around baggage pilferage in SAA. And we went to court. They fought to stay at our airport and provide a service. We said, no, if you're not part of the service value chain at this airport, you're beginning to affect brand, not brand O.R. Tambo now, but brand South Africa, because this baggage pilferage thing around 2006 was a problem. So it's not as though we don't pay attention. If I can echo the comments of the gentleman behind me, the challenge for us is really to ensure that the data sets that we are working from are all credible. Otherwise, we send mixed and confusing messages, which confuse the passenger even further. So if the baggage problem is out of control, let us all move from the benchmark or the base that says it is out of control, let's fix it. But if your view is different from my view, then we spend a lot of energy trying to align our views rather than fixing the problem. So thank you very much for this opportunity, and any time that you would need us to come back and give progress on where we are more than happy to do that. But we've certainly taken the inputs that the members have given, and there's certainly things that we need to go away and address as acts, and we thank you for the opportunity to have presented here today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Masego. You are playing a very, very important role in South Africa as a destination. For foreigners, you are the first experience. And first experience is last. Do remember that. Secondly, the country, the whole of South Africa, the 40 million people of South Africa, have put you there because they trust you. It's our trust. Let us make sure that together then we solve this problem, and that you deserve our trust. Let us keep on proving. I'm not mentioning you because it's only AXA, it could be other ones. But let us say if we are in Parliament, we are in Parliament because they are trusted people that trusted us. Let us return that trust. If we are in SAE, let us return that trust in as much as in anywhere we are deployed. And I think we shall have to, after some time, to call you back. We are going to do our research investigations. We are going to Google that mishandled by baggage and find out whether you have told the truth or not. and then come back, and then next time we shall engage. But right now, let us close this meeting, continue to support the box, wherever they are. They need the prayers. And let us conclude with those words. Pray for the box, and pray for Mr. Masego and his team. Thank you. Bye bye. I think they'll go into the second round. Do you think they'll need they selected the wrong team, the first team. Let us break for 10 minutes and then let us see how we manage the rest of the agenda. We'll just come back to see how we'll manage the rest of the agenda for 5 minutes and then come back.
Capex, remains capex, and operational expenditure
is for operational expenditure, and look at expenditure in line with the five priorities, inclusive growth with decent jobs and sustainable livelihoods, rural development, and so forth. Then number two, that is on the 18th, that is the report and financial statements now on the National Department of Tourism. So it will be first week when we come back on the 11th, SA Tourism, the next week, the department. So the SA Tourism is the promotional arm of the National Department of Tourism, and it receives the most amount of the total budget. So the purpose of the two hearings will be to assess and evaluate progress in meeting government strategic objectives and targets, and to prepare for the submission of budgetary review and recommendations reports, and those BRRR reports, which we have to submit later this year, where we make recommendations in as far as the budget is concerned within the law, where that is the allowances that are there in the money bill, or is it called now the Money Act. So those will be the 2 weeks. Then the next week on the 25th, consideration and adoption of the committee report on budgetary review and recommendations report, that is PRRR report, after looking at the two. And then the following week on the 1st of November, local oversight trip to Mitchell's Plain and one and back to assess the SMME's businesses. Part of our distinct program of checking the disadvantaged areas. And then if it is not enough to go to Mitchell's Plain and Manning Beck, you can recommend other places. Remember, we've gone to Kukuletu, we've gone to Kailicha, we've gone to Langa. So we'll continue the townships. If you feel that is not enough, Let us see what else we need to do. From the 7th to the 10th of November is to honor an invitation to the World Travel Market, which is an annual event talking about tourism and global developments in tourism, comparing statistics and recent trends in tourism. The tourism and travel. Is it in America or Mexico? Whereabouts is it? It's in London. Oh, okay, it's in London. Then, on the 15th of November, briefing by the National Accommodation Association of South Africa on the state of accommodation and implementation of the new grading system and the challenges. I think before we get into that, we have to do our research a bit and see whether there are no complaints around this grading and whether we are doing enough to improve, as they say. You remember we are in Taung, in a three-star, whether it was a three-star, and so forth, because three-stars have got to be three-stars. They cannot be a three-star of the disadvantage and three-star of the advantage. Fortunately, you can't grade like that. Three-star is just three-star, and you've got to strive and for that. And then, the reason being that you are protecting the product. If a person says they want a 3-star listing experience, if it is different, now you are devaluing our destination as a product. So we've got to be careful. We don't have to mix transformation together with those issues. They don't mix. If people need to be assisted, let them be assisted to reach the third level. I've noted also in Pologwana that the 3-star was not quite a 3-star, but we've got to strive and constructively, but make sure that 3 stars are 3 stars. Then on the 22nd of November, briefing by the South African Association for the Conference Industry, maintaining and improving the standards of efficiency and professionalism for the conference and events industry in South Africa. The aim will be to assess and evaluate the state of the industry and job creation as part of our oversight work. Then on the 29th of November, the process... it will be here, but it will be that association.
Okay.
They'll be briefing us. The hotel owners, the lodge owners, B&B owners, and so forth. Then on the 29th of November, to process internal committee business, including consideration and adoption of the program for the first quarter. So that will be the last week in November, which will be the last week in Parliament before we break for the recess and constituency work. So that is our program. Are there any difficulties or any problems in the program or any omissions, serious omissions, that we did not have for this year? Parliament has got to get its act together. Really, we cannot have a committee meeting doing this thing. It's contempt of Parliament by management of Parliament. Contempt of Parliament by management of Parliament. And really, it's not acceptable. If you plan, you cannot plan and have these things happening at the same time. You've got project managers, you've got every person, but two contradicting things happening at the same time. We qualify to manage this place. Mama Skala. It's just without regard to Parliament and its members, together with the committees. I think this thing cannot go on for forever. In some instances, people killing, and when we are in a meeting, I mean, it's unacceptable. But let the committee section report that to the seniors, and we'll report it to the chief whip as well. This is unacceptable. And report it to your chief whips as well, the other parties.
Yes.
Because, I mean, something that is unacceptable is unacceptable. Mm-hmm. And then let us take it from there. Then that is the problem. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I want to comment and also have prepared the program. I have no complaint about the program, the current one, except to say maybe we need to increase our visit or our contact with stakeholders. I see there's management here and SMM is our group, but maybe we can say to ourselves maybe twice a quarter our meetings with business stakeholder program, whatever the program that you might think of. But of course,
I'm also taking into account the fact that we've been out on oversight work, and that also gives us opportunity to meet the stakeholders. But I think this area of how they are doing in the industry, how they are participating in the industry, is quite important. But as we said the other time, that it should not only be the SMMEs, the disadvantaged ones, we should also consider the successful ones, so that we can compare, be able to compare and know what standards we are talking about. And then, of course, the provinces. When are we going to the Eastern Cape?
I mean, we shall be going to the Eastern Cape quite soon as well. Early next year we'll be going to the Eastern Cape, and then if we find another week, we'll see which provinces are outstanding. Perhaps Mpumalanga, because perhaps it could be Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, then KwaZulu-Natal. Oh, Free State and Eastern Cape. Okay. Yeah. We'll arrange, and then early next year, next quarter. If so. Okay. There is a proposal that we adopt the program. How much of a second read? Any other view? Adopted. Then, item number 4. Let me allow Cherry to explain this one briefly. The blend tour to Malaysia. Essentially, they say that they are not ready for us. Parliament is going to, they may have elections, and then it is not possible. It may not be possible. So now, because of that doubt, I think we no more have time for doubt now. Let us just dump Malaysia and then see where else we can go. Because otherwise, we may end up having no plan. Things are just not, they're not responding, and we are getting responses from our embassy there that those people are not having their act together. The next thing will have a lot of disappointments when we arrive there. So if people cannot have their act together, it's better not for us to go to get to their destination. But we shall try and check which is the next suitable venue. Could be China, could be any other destination. Because China could be having heritage or any other country. But depending on the objectives, national objectives. Remember, inclusive growth with sustainable livelihoods and jobs. Whether a country with an unemployment of more than 30% can afford to say it wants decent jobs or not, let us look at our country as objectively as possible. Are we in a position to be choosy with jobs or not? If so, then how do we then create those jobs? And if we cannot afford to be choosy, let's see how we then maintain standards with the types of jobs that we can create as economies. And there are attractions in other countries as well, depending on heritage, but we cannot match other countries because of the standard of our heritage. So let us look as to which other countries, and looking at domestic markets because of the fluctuations in global tourism markets, those types of things. Okay. No, so we'll continue, but we shall be using those criteria. Rural development. Which country is Australia better? New Zealand, is it better? Which are, if you have information as well, give us that information. But let us, and then where you know government supports tourism in a particular way, let us try and get that country. Yes, Susie.
I was just suggesting, I say it's Japan in Nagoya.
Yeah, in fact, if you say Japan in Nagoya, tell us the characteristics. It's rural, it's, you know, around our objectives.
It's rural and the government in Nagoya is trying to assist even those rural in terms of the tourism. They focus more of rural. They want to. You can't understand when you are in the rural because they are trying to balance the two.
Okay, rural is
heavy. Yes.
Yeah, I think we need to learn a few lessons, and if we go there, let us also do our research, Bungi. And see what is possible and what is not possible. But what will be important now is that within a week we should have decided, and then within a week we should cancel Malaysia and inform them that, given the uncertainty, because you can't plan when things are not certain, we then have to do that one. And then continue. But let me also thank you very much for the participation and the situation at AXA. We wanted to have AXA together with SAE for this reason. The other one is giving another version, the other one is giving another version. The other one is blaming the other one is blaming the other. But we said that they've got to come together, and then they'll get to the point when we say, now we want you together next time, so that the airlines and the service providers as well, and the license holders. But at the end of the day, they've got to tell us who is going to carry the pack. You can't have a situation where there's no one responsible when the giving things happen. Passengers don't know what AXA is responsible for and airline is responsible for. And then we weren't giving answers in as far as pilferage is concerned. You, Mount Pam, nearly asked it around the question of saying, around the World Cup, we had an oversupply of police. Now, because it's no longer World Cup, police were withdrawn. But somehow we cannot employ private police. We've got to employ private security if we identify that the problem is with security. That is what a manager is employed for. So it's these things that we've got to the deployments and so forth that we've got to look into. But once more, thank you very much. We shall be having a meeting, our next meeting next week. Please do prepare for the minutes. We shall be having them any meeting now. We shall keep having them in all our meetings. Thank you very much. Meetings adjourned.